Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show here. And let's turn my volume up a little bit. Hello. Hello. Can you hear me? Hello. Hang on a second. And let's try. Hang on a second. Hello. Can you hear me? I'm not hearing. Hello. Hello, can you hear me? Turn it down. Okay. How are we now? Can you hear me? I'm not hearing anything back at all here, and I don't know why. My technician's telling me that everything is great. I'm just not getting a feedback here into my recording system. I will work on fixing that later on. Okay, welcome to the show. As you can see, it's a typical Monday. We're off to all kinds of problems and technical issues, and partly it's because over the weekend I had to use this mixer board for something else, and for some reason we are not back to doing what we ought to be. So let's just work with that. The economy, starting off with that. The Dow dropped 250 points today. It's down below the 2002 levels. We're getting awfully close to that 6,000s level that I was telling you about last week. We're getting there even faster than I expected. Ritz Camera has gone into bankruptcy. That's the last high-end camera store we have here on the island of Oahu. AIG is dodging rumors of a Chapter 11 filing. They insist it's not going to happen. Observers are saying they may be just barely treading water. More newspapers are filing Chapter 11. It's just really kind of bad all over the place. Now, we're getting, at this point, an unconfirmed story. Unconfirmed story. That American Express is offering to buy out some of their credit card holders' accounts for $300. And the deal is that they will offer you $300 to close your credit card account with them. And you have to pay it off by April 30. And you will lose all your rewards and accrued bonus points and everything else. But the idea is that American Express is trying to limit their potential exposure to defaults as the recession deepens. And remember, on Saturday, I told you about this other offer from Capital One, where they're going to really increase your interest rates unless you opt out of the card, and then they'll let you pay off the balance at your current rate. And obviously, we're seeing a trend here where the credit card companies are trying to basically get people to tear up their cards. And what this tells us is they're expecting things to get a lot worse. They're expecting it to get much, much worse. And the problem here is that this is basically a no-confidence vote on Barack Obama. Now, earlier today, we had Barack Obama giving a speech to this meeting of various financial individuals, the Fiscal Responsibility Summit, and also he's meeting the governors of the states. And he's talking about ways to revive the economy. And it occurs to me, in listening to him talk and listening to advisors talk, it reminds me of this old story about the law of the hammer. The law of the hammer. And the law of the hammer states quite simply that if you give a small child a hammer, everything they're going to encounter will require pounding. And what this means is that people are used to solving new problems by what they already know how to do. So we have bookkeepers who think we can solve the economic problem with a change in bookkeeping or new bookkeeping tricks. Lawyers are going to think that we can pass new laws and legislate our way out of the economic doldrums. Bankers always see stimulating new borrowing as the solution to any of the problems they have. And they're all going in these mutually exclusive and self-contradictory directions. And the bottom line here is that Barack Obama is trying to find some way for Americans to start buying homes again so that real estate prices will go up. There'll be this artificially created equity that we can all borrow on and go back to spending, which is the process by which we got into this mess to start with. And here is the problem. Because our jobs have been driven away to other countries, because the government gave tax credits to corporations to make it easy to ship high-paying manufacturing jobs to other countries, we're caught between a rock and a hard place. If property values go up, most of us will not be able to buy homes, and we won't have any equity on which to take out new loans to buy new goodies. And if property values go down, more and more homeowners will be trapped in negative equity. They'll go into default and bankruptcy, and the cycle will accelerate. Now, everybody wants to blame the subprime mortgage borrowers as the villains in this case, but they really aren't. It's the derivatives. It's the trillions in dollars in gambling debts that Wall Street ran up, and now they're dumping on the rest of us. But the reality is that running up housing prices isn't a fix unless the wages and salaries of working class Americans are rising to be able to afford those homes. And I'm watching what Barack Obama is doing, and I got to tell you, he's such a disappointment. He's only been on the job 1 month, and already I'm writing him off as a failure. Because he's talking about all these bookkeeping tricks and accounting tricks and all of this manipulation in the financial markets as a fix, and he's not dealing with the reality. Working class Americans had their jobs taken away, their high-paying jobs taken away, the jobs that let them pay the mortgage and the credit card. That all got taken away, and he's doing nothing about bringing it back. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Fred in Pennsylvania. Aloha, Fred. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi. I don't know if I've ever spoken to you before, but I really admire your work.
Well, thank you.
I'm calling from Philadelphia, and what I want to talk about is the stealing of money by these international investment banks. Is Morgan Stanley or Morgan Stanley Asia in that category, Mike?
It's kind of hard to know. There's a lot of stuff that's going on, you know, behind the scenes that it's very, very hard.
Well, this is exactly that. It is behind the scenes. There was a commission that met last week. I have with a long title. I don't remember the full title, but it had to do with the bank bailout, the upcoming bailout, which is going to be, you know, $2 trillion. And the fellow was Stephen Roach, head of Morgan Stanley Asia. And he absolutely refused to answer an extremely important question. They said, what would China do? Wouldn't they simply come over here and take their huge stimulus package and simply buy us up, buy, you know, victimize us by buying our assets? And he just wouldn't even answer that. He simply dodged that question. And then later, yesterday on Bloomberg, he was asked, isn't China taking its stimulus package, which is $1 trillion, and just pumping it, speculating right in their own stock market? They had a 26% jump in their stock market, and he dodged that one. And then he went on, and then he said on Bloomberg that they are going to be nimble and they're going to profit from whatever happens, and they really don't want to give a lot of details about what they're doing either in the U.S. or in Asia. And I'm saying that they basically don't even care if countries rise or fall, governments rise or fall. There's a war that breaks out. There's a loss of our life expectancy, like in Russia. They think of themselves as the corporations as immortal, and they're in for that long haul. And if we don't get what their philosophy is and push back against it, we're going to just be, you know, impoverished to an unbelievable extent, and we won't even be able to get any traction.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. The banks really do see themselves as supranational entities, and they're basically out looking for their bottom line. And if it wrecks the country underneath them, hey, they just find a new one. We got to take a break here and listen to some commercials, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors. Hang in there, Fred. We'll come back to you. We'll be right back.
This is is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
How about now? Okay. Okay, I am back. I am sorry for all the technical difficulties that we are having here today. We had to use our mixing setup for a recording session over the weekend, and it's not working properly, but I guess we're going to finish the show doing this way. So is Fred still there from Philadelphia? Okay, Fred. Yeah, I can hear you fine. It's just a problem here locally, and we're getting our signal back now.
Okay.
Now, you were mentioned before, you're talking about J.P. Morgan Chase.
This is incredible. I tuned into the hearing on the new legislation, and the head of Morgan Stanley Asia, I mean, you're talking about important decisions have to be made as to whether, you know, you should toss around $1 or 2 trillion in extra money. This is additional money. And when credit becomes, when credit is put in someone's account, it becomes real wealth. It has the potential to it's fungible, and it has the potential to be anything, including a slush fund. So I was shocked when, the people on this commission, they don't even have the brains or the intuition to understand what this guy is saying. That their friends in China, and they have close ties with the Chinese leadership, they're going to simply use that money for aggrandizement. There's no guarantees. There's no, you know, they don't necessarily are going to do anything that's going to boost demand over here. How are they going to boost demand over here? With that political system and that and the secrecy that they have in China on their spending, so they have pumped up their own market 26%, their own stock market, which he poo-pooed. But the reporter in Bloomberg said that they had done this, and he also wouldn't answer the question about how is all this going to be structured? This is all basically still secret. And they have their own trade secrets. You know, remember Paulson was talking about trade secrets being the element of law that he was going to use to keep all the arrangements secret. And I'm saying that, that I see this as being just another equal amount, at least equal amount to all the money before, being forked over to the surviving giant commercial banks, international.
Yeah, basically, what's going on here? You're correct. The banks are thinking solely in terms of their own health. I mean, we're seeing these articles come out, the puff pieces in the various dailies, saying that what is good for the banks is good for America. What's good for the ultra rich is good for everybody. And there is a lot of secrecy going on. People don't want to talk about what's really happening. I've got a video linked to the front of whatreallyhappened.com. Pete Stark blows up over the national debt, where this Pete Stark is being interviewed. And the interviewer asks him a simple question. Is the fact that our country deeper in debt mean we're having to pay more interest? And this Pete Stark gets really defensive, and he blows up and he says, do you have a doctorate in economics? Do you even have a master's degree? Well, then you can't possibly know what you're talking about. And he's just going way, way out there to try and
so if you're
do this.
If you're an Aristotle, then, or you know, if you just have a mind, then that doesn't count. That only the decision makers can make decisions, and they don't take any input from anybody else.
That's exactly what we're getting. And basically the point is he's trying to sell this idea that, yes, too much debt for an individual is a bad thing. But for nations, it's absolutely essential. And the more debt we're in, the better it is and the more we're growing. And he's, you know, it's very Orwellian speak, you know, where he's trying to say debt is wealth. And if this was such a good way to run a business, you know, they would have started the United States with this financial system right from the beginning and not had that unpleasant business between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton.
Right, and if I could, I'd like to make a suggestion that it's not a written, completely original. You had people, independents, political independents like Ross Perot talking about this in 92. Why don't we have the budget be basically a 60-day budget? I mean, this is the feeling that I'm getting. Mike, I'm feeling as though the government isn't even acting as though this is a bona fide emergency. This is a bona fide emergency conditions. We can't go with an annual budget with leaders like we have in Congress putting 10 years worth of spending into a bill and basically, you know, not even having any not even defining what they are doing with the particular.
Yeah, the problem is the money is going in all the wrong places. The money is not being spent where it needs to go. They're looking, you know, these stimulus packages, it's a huge pork barrel. Everybody's doing their favorite little infrastructure projects, and a lot of it is going to things like new computers for government offices, you know, cleaning up,
right.
Government areas, and refurbishing government buildings and stuff.
Yeah, and they're also continuing age-old things that have need to be looked at. I mean, I am for, I personally think that Social Security, if it's done honestly, is the core. It is the most honest part of the budget if it's really carried out consistently and honestly. I mean, and I am also for, you know, a metal standard. But even besides that, I mean, the fact is, if you have a continual tax, like Social Security payroll, then there's nothing wrong with getting that back. That doesn't kill freedom. It doesn't kill, our ideals. It's just as long as it doesn't explode one way or the other, either become, you know, like in Argentina or Uruguay, you know, you get like an enormous pension that can't be sustained, or nothing, you know, or stolen.
We're already there. A lot of the pension funds here in the United States are basically on the verge of collapse. They were all invested with this Alan Stanford and Bernie Madoff, and we're beginning to get the idea that it could very well be that a large, large portion of our investment banking industry, they like to call themselves, has been playing these Ponzi games for years now because they didn't have any other real way to make money because we'd lost our manufacturing. In fact, in hindsight, they always say hindsight is, you know, vision is 2020. You know, it's hard to imagine how were these people making all their money in a nation that doesn't make any products for sale, and especially, you know, in the 80s we moved to the so-called service economy, and then the services were being offshored as well. Anyway, Fred, we got to let you
Thank
go
you.
Here, and we'll talk to you again. We're going to take a break here for some commercials and look at some technical issues, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And I apologize for all the little glitches we've had, but we're going to finish the show, and I'm not going to get out the screwdriver until a little bit later. But I am one of those technoids. If all the little lights aren't blinking correctly and all the little knobs aren't turning, I get all flustered and bothered, and I want everything to work, and I'm just tear the front of the panels off of this thing here again and get in and clean it up. But we'll save that for later on. Now, getting back real briefly to the economy, then we've got a couple of other stories to cover today. And again, getting back to Obama's speech this morning, the financial leadership of this country is really thinking in terms of what they already know in terms of how to fix the economy. They're thinking inside their existing box. They're not looking outside for more creative, possibly more dramatic solutions. Their idea is basically they don't even want to look at the derivatives. They don't want to look at the derivatives because the derivatives are because, you know, these huge gambling losses. And I think the thinking is that if they can get the real estate market back up again, get people buying homes again, get these inflated housing values again, then people will start borrowing and spending like they did before, and the derivatives problem automatically goes away, because then the derivatives start flowing back the other way, and people get insanely, obscenely rich. And I can understand the attractiveness of this idea. But again, it all gets back to that fundamental problem, that if home prices start going back up, yes, it's going to artificially create this new wealth and equity in the homes against which people can borrow and go buy things. But as housing prices go up, in a climate where a lot of people have lost their previous high-paying jobs to other countries, and they're having to take these minimum wage jobs now, they're not going to be able to buy the homes. So the reality is this idea of stimulating the housing market isn't going to work, because 6 months down the road, these new homeowners or these refinanced homeowners, they're going to be in default again, unless you bring back the high-paying manufacturing jobs. And Obama's a consummate politician. He was very convincing. I thought, you know, he was going to be an agent of change. I was wrong. I will admit it. I know Alex Jones is out there in the darkness somewhere snickering and laughing at me, but yes, I was wrong. Because I'll tell you right now, putting college graduates to work filling potholes is not going to restore public confidence in the economy. Taking $1 trillion from the taxpayers to give to the bank to loan back to the people at interest is not going to restore public confidence. If anything, these cosmetic actions are eroding public confidence in the economy. Because it looks like the government really can't figure their way out of this thing. And apparently they can't. They're not seeing the obvious problem. They're playing with the bookkeeping. They're changing the rules. They're trying to put things back to the way they were. But the one thing they won't bring back is the jobs that we had before. And that's really all the American people want. We're not looking for a miracle from the government. All we want is what we had before. The jobs that we spent a life putting together, that use the skills we spent a lifetime acquiring, and in some cases, in the case of college students, went into debt to acquire. We've got all these wonderful skills. We're ready to use them. And Obama's answer is to have us out there filling in the potholes. I mean, talk about designed to completely demoralize the American people. Everything we've seen in the stimulus plan, it's, yeah, we're going to polish up some government buildings and we're going to fill in some potholes on the road, but all these so-called shovel-ready projects, they're really little pet projects for local administrations, you know, fixing up a building here and the rest of that. And there's not a penny that is being put out there to revive the manufacturing. And it's going to fail. And the bottom line is they're trying to scapegoat the mortgage customers, the subprime mortgage lenders. And it turns out, in hindsight, that a lot of the people who got into these subprime mortgages actually qualified for regular mortgages. They made, you know, they had the credit rating, they had the money, they had the means for a regular mortgage, but they were being fraudulently shifted into the subprimes by greedy mortgage lenders because the interest rate payout and the fee structure is higher for the subprimes. And so they got put into these mortgages that had the higher escalating adjustable rates. They were being robbed is what they were. And they're scapegoating these mortgage lenders, and what nobody wants to talk about is the fact that at the time these people bought these homes, they could make the payments. They were able to pay their bills. then the jobs went away. And that's really the proximate cause. And until our government is willing to bring back those high-paying jobs for all of us, there's not a thing they can do to fix the economy. I think it's just going to get worse and worse. We're already seeing newspaper articles come out. They're talking about we're already headed into worse than the Great Depression of 29. We're headed into collapse of the country, USSR style. And I don't know about you, but in looking objectively around me in my life right now, I think my life would be personally better off if the current U.S. government went away and made way for something with a little bit better fiscal sense. Every one of you is on the hook right now for tens of thousands of dollars of debt that the U.S. government has run up and dumped on you without your permission. If the U.S. government collapses and goes away, so does that debt. And that means that whatever government comes along, when you're paying taxes to it, you're going to get that full amount of tax benefit back, whether it's medical care, better education, better roads. The reason our country is deteriorating is because most of the money that is being taken from us is being spent on war, or it's being spent paying the interest on the loans that the government has already taken out. The U.S. government really isn't so much debt they can't get out. That's why we have these economists saying, oh, no, debt for a government is a good thing. We've got to have plenty of debt because that's where our money comes from. And that's the big lie of the Federal Reserve. Because when this country started, we had money that was based on units of worth. There was money in this country. There was plenty of money all over this country without debt attached to it. Because that's the monetary system the Founding Fathers gave us. It is only the Federal Reserve and the private banks that own it that insist that all money in this country be the product of debt, that it be borrowed from their bank before it's put into circulation. And that's the big lie. Because once the Federal Reserve goes into operation, more money is owed than actually exists. And that was the trap. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Paula in Texas. Paula, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, welcome. I was just listening to Fred, I believe, before you went to the commercial break.
Yes.
And he was talking about the Chinese and how the CEO of J.P. Morgan would not answer questions. And my concern is, I found out about 3 years ago that a lot of Chinese are buying up land along I-35, which runs from Laredo all the way to Canada. And so I personally want to start checking into this, but just south of Dallas, there's a man from Taiwan who owns quite a bit of land between Dallas and Waxahachie. And then also here in Austin, there's a lot of Chinese buying up land. The first shocker was that the Chinese could even buy land here. And the second one was that if they're also building turnpikes in Mexico. The Chinese are building turnpikes down there. So my question is, what's to stop them from rolling tanks up I-35 if they own all the land along I-35?
If they own all the land along I-35, they don't need the tanks. They don't. That's just the reality, okay? And it's not just the Chinese in Texas. The reality is that back at the time when Richard Nixon suspended the gold standard, and actually we're going to have to take a break here because we're just coming up on some commercials. But Paula, stick with me because when we come back, I want to talk about the end of the gold standard and the use of environmentalism as a cover to collateralize America's debt with our public lands. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Are you tired of searching for Craig Talk Radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And we're still with Paula from Texas. We're talking about the economy. We're talking about the influx of foreign purchasers who are taking advantage of the depressed real estate values to basically buy a lot of land. And we have been through this before. We have been through this before. Back in the mid-90s, when the dollar was devalued, it triggered this huge real estate buying spree by the Japanese, who had a huge trade imbalance against the United States. They had a lot of money because we'd been buying things from them and not selling products to cover it. And they came in, they bought up some movie studios and a bunch of other things. They bought huge amounts of land here in Hawaii and ultimately didn't work out very well. And as a matter of fact, one of the reasons why our local Hawaiian banks are relatively immune from the subprime crisis is because they were very gun-shy because of some of the recklessness that happened during the Japanese land boom. And so they were being very, very conservative. Now, we're still getting slammed by the fallout from the derivatives, of course, but our banks are not on the danger list with the FDIC. Now, back in Richard Nixon's day, it was becoming very obvious that the United States was borrowing more money than it had gold to collateralize it. And some of the other countries to whom we owed money started to say, you know, we think we would just as soon have the gold under our control until you are able to redeem it by paying back all this money that you've bought from us. And Richard Nixon basically slammed the little window in Fort Knox and said, you can't have any more. And in order to continue the loan process, he decided to collateralize these foreign loans with large tracts of American public lands. And in order to conceal the reality of what was being done with our public lands, Richard Nixon launched the environmental movement, which used a variety of programs, whether it was wilderness area, wet heritage rivers, preserved wetlands. I mean, there's all these different programs that grab bits of land and say, you can't go in there anymore. The roadless areas, so forth and so on. What this is really about is these large tracts of land, which have lots of natural resources on them, which American industry could use. These areas were set aside and locked away. And Nixon said, okay, this is the collateral on the loans. And so the reality is right now that even without having to buy our land, a lot of the foreign countries to whom the United States owe money can come in and say, this land is ours. We're going to put our mining companies on it. We're going to put our hotels on it. And if you want to come onto it, you have to pay us fees. And we're very, very close to winding up as tenants on the country that our forefathers basically created a nation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't worry about Chinese. I wouldn't worry about Chinese tanks. They don't need them. They can just buy the place.
Well, it's kind of alarming because I don't think people really realize what's going on. That foreigners, for one thing, we can't go to China and buy land. We can't go to Germany and buy land. We can't go to Mexico and buy land. We can lease it, at least in Mexico, but I don't understand why, how America could be sitting here and letting all these foreign countries buy up our land.
We owe them too much money to refuse.
I'm appalled. I mean, it was happening under everybody's nose, and I just wanted to. Sorry about that. I'm outside.
Okay.
Anyway, I just want people to be aware of what's going on. Because I just started tracking this about 3 years ago when Cindy Jacobs, who is one of God's generals, she's a minister that mainly ministers in Taiwan and Korea. She's in the Asian front, but doesn't limit herself to that. But she said, you know, she is a prophetess and that the Lord was telling her to buy up the land along I-35. And I'm going, what? I wonder why. And then I started finding out who owns the land. At least in Texas, there's a lot of Chinese, a lot of people from Taiwan buying up the land. And that's disturbing to me, and I just thought people need to hear that and know about it and think about it. What can we do to change the tide to where Americans can hang on to America.
Well, that's going to be a real trick here because, you know, these other countries that are holding all of these U.S. dollars that they've been hanging on to because we're not selling them anything, if they hang on to the dollars much longer, they're going to start losing value. They might as well spend them now. What's for sale? American property, American real estate at bargain basement prices. Yeah, they're going to come in here and buy it up. And our government's going to go right along with it. Yes, they could pass a law requiring, you know, banning foreign ownership. But there is so much foreign ownership in this country right now, in particular from Saudi Arabia and Israel, that, you know, it's impractical. They can't just say only the Chinese or only the Japanese are barred from buying. That would certainly be considered racist. And it would be. It would be.
Yeah.
But we've sold so much of our country to these other countries in the Mideast. Trying to stop now, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to get out there and let people...
We got it out there.
I appreciate that. And
okay.
Hopefully we can figure out a way to get it stopped and reverse the trend. If nothing else, you know, there are people that are philanthropists that could buy the land just to keep America owning America.
Well, it would be nice. Unfortunately, a lot of the philanthropists had their money invested with Bernie Madoff, and so they're not quite as philanthropic as they used to be. I know Paul Allen could do it. Paul Allen could probably buy most of Texas himself. But anyway, we're going to let you go here, Paula, because I've got one more story to cover, and we're almost at the end of the day here. And this is the story of the... Sholem Rubashkin, who was the CEO of Agriprocessor Incorporated. Now, this is a slaughterhouse in Postville, Iowa, that there's been like 100 counts of all these crimes, including illegal immigration, false documents, credit scams. They found a meth lab on the property. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on, all the stuff that this guy was doing. Okay, you're going to love this one. Today, attorneys for Rubashkin went before the judge and said all the charges, all the bank fraud and immigration and drug charges against him should be dismissed because the grand jury that indicted him is anti-Semitic. I am not kidding. This is not a joke. I am not making this up. This is this guy's defense. The grand jury hates him because he's Jewish, and that's the only reason he was charged. And they're really, really trying to get away with this one. All right, real quick, this is a topic I wanted to get into today, and I don't have enough time, but I'm going to intro it and tease it today. We're going to come back to this tomorrow. We're hearing about all this news about all this violence down in Mexico, and it's being categorized as drug crime violence and this, and it's kind of a bit of a misnomer because what's really going on here, this is a civil war that's taking place. You have got the population of Mexico is tired of the drug corruption of certain portions of their government, just like portions of our government have been neck deep in contraband, going back to Joe Kennedy being a rum runner and making his money that way. Drugs and government go together. That's a given. Skull and Bones was founded with opium money. In Mexico, the Mexican people have had it. They've had it. They're tired of seeing their nation pillaged by these very rich drug lords who are very high up and linked to the government. So they're trying to fight back. And it is a civil war. Our media doesn't want to call it a civil war because that might give Americans a little bit of an idea. Oh, and by the way, over the weekend, the government of Latvia fell to the economic protests over there. So that's Iceland, now Latvia, Ireland maybe next. But I digress. The Texas National Guard is reportedly on full alert across the border between Texas and Mexico. The concern is that the violence, the civil war, might spread across the border, that there are going to be huge crowds of refugees trying to get across, and it's a very, very ugly situation. Where is our army, and, you know, where are the other military supplies that we need to secure our borders? Of course, they're still over there in Iraq and Afghanistan and poised at Iran. And here we have a crisis a little bit closer to home. And I know a few years ago a lot of people were joking and saying, oh, you know, Mexico, yeah, big deal. Mexico's going to invade us. Could actually happen. Not a deliberate invasion, but it's a very chaotic situation down there. And if widespread panic happens, you're going to see a lot of people trying to come over the border to what they imagine is the safety of the United States. I don't think that things are all that much better here in the United States right now. In fact, we hear now of a lot of the illegal immigrants trying to get back into Mexico because they just can't make it here anymore. All right, that's it for our show. I promise you we'll get our technical glitches fixed for tomorrow, and we'll be back at the same time talking about Civil War in Mexico, a bunch of other stories I needed to get to today and I didn't. Until tomorrow, aloha, America.